Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Pad Raja Pachara Satya Sri 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 Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Sri Prabhupada Ki Jai Iskan Founder Charya Sri Prabhupada Ki Jai Sri Bhagavatam Ki Jai Samadhi Bhakti Vinda Ki Jai Gaurav Bhimananda All glories to some of the devotees All glories to some of the devotees All glories to some of the devotees All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Stai Putale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityanamani Namaste Sarasagiri Gaura Bani Pachani Nirvishesha Srimi Vari Paschitari Sitarani Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 7, Text 9. Let's see. Tasmad yuktendriya gramo yukta chitta idam jagat atmanikshaspa vittitam atmanamayadishvare Tasmad yuktendriya gramo Yukta chitta idam jagat Atmanikshaspa vittitam Atmanam yadishvare Tasmad yuktendriya gramo Yukta chitta idam jagat Atmanikshaspa vittitam Atmanam yadishvare
Subduing. Chitta, your mind. Idam, this. Jagat, world. Atmani, within the individual soul, Ikshasva, you should see, Vittatam, spread out, as the substance of his material enjoyment. Atmanam, in that individual soul, Mayi, in me, Adishvare, the Supreme Controller. Translation purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Therefore, bringing all your senses under control, and thus subduing the mind, you should see the entire world is situated within the Self, who is expanded everywhere, and you should also see this individual Self within me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. The word vittatam, or widely expanded, implies that the individual jiva soul is present throughout the material universe. Similarly, in the Bhagavad Gita 2.24, Krishna says, nitya sarvagata, the individual soul is eternal and is expanded everywhere throughout the material and spiritual worlds. This does not mean, however, that each individual soul is all-pervading, but that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, has expanded his marginal potency everywhere. Thus, one should not blindly conclude that a minute living entity is all-pervading. Rather, one should understand that God is great and expands his personal energy everywhere. In this verse, Atmanikshashva Vittatam means that the material world is created to facilitate the sense gratification of the conditioned souls who are trying to enjoy without Krishna, their actual master. The living entities are busily trying to exploit the external energy of the Lord, but their jurisdiction over the material world is illusory. Both the material nature and the conditioned living beings are energies of the Lord, and thus exist within the personality of Godhead and are under His supreme control. The individual living entity exists for the pleasure of the personality of Godhead and is the Lord's eternal servant. As soon as the senses become absorbed in material gratification, they lose their power to experience the absolute truth. The actual goal of sense activity is satisfaction of Vishnu, the Lord. And all of the senses can experience infinite spiritual pleasure by perceiving and serving the Lord in His personal feature. Those who adopt the impersonal conception of God, however, try to stop all sense activity. But because the senses cannot remain permanently inactive, they naturally return to activities in the realm of material illusion. If one engages the senses in the service of the personality of Godhead, then one enjoys unlimited pleasure upon seeing the transcendental beauty of the Lord's form. But unless one qualifies himself by pure, loving devotion to Krishna, the Lord does not award him this exalted experience. Therefore, every conditioned soul should end his unnecessary separation from the personality of Godhead by rejoining the Lord's blissful company. Lord Krishna personally comes down to reopen the blind eyes of the conditioned souls, and thus the Lord is personally teaching Uddhava so that sincere souls in the future might take advantage of his instructions. Indeed, hundreds of millions of people even now derive spiritual enlightenment from Lord Krishna's instructions to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. Hare Krishna. So I thought this was a very nice purport, a nice explanation about the jiva. The jiva within this material world, and what is Krishna's plan for the jivas within this material world? First, we understand that the living entities are found everywhere. As quoted from Bhagavad Gita 2.24, sarvagata. Sarvagata means all-pervading. Sarvas, all, gata, situated everywhere, whatever. Loose translation. Sorry. In the Bhagavad Gita, purport to that verse, Srila Prabhupada mentions how the living entities are found throughout the entire material universe, even within fire. And he mentions specifically that there are living entities within the sun planet. Now, for the non-devotee, this may seem almost incredulous. or seem, is this, how is this possible? How can a living entity exist within the sun globe or within fire? But that's simply due to our limited experience. We know that all material bodies are made out of the basic elements of earth, fire, water, air, and ether, and living entities can exist in any of these bodily forms, in many, many places. I was actually looking at some different examples of this. So we shouldn't doubt the words of the scriptures saying that living entities are everywhere, because even the material scientists have found living entities in places where you would never imagine. For instance, in Antarctica, which is places in the interior where it never gets above freezing, totally frozen all the time, never goes above 32 degrees Fahrenheit. They found 400 species of lichen and 100 moss species. They say this isn't very much, this is very low. Many places have thousands of these species. But even in this most hostile environment, there are all sorts of living entities somehow trying to live there in the ice. And they've also found, if you go down into the deepest ocean trenches, there's this one, they call it a trench, it's a very, very deep place in the ocean. It's like 5 or 6 miles deep, you know, it's off the Philippines, I think. And what is called the Manila Trench. And there, if you go down to the bottom, 5 miles down, the pressure is so great that it's very, very difficult for scientists to even be able to find out what's there, because, you know, these submarine type things they send down, most of them, the pressure is so great it would just crush them immediately. But, you know, they come up with enough, somehow they're able to build it in a way that they could actually get down there and explore what was there. And they found that there's all these species of fish. Fish living 5 miles down there in pressures that would just crush anything, practically. You know, somehow or another, they found a way to survive. And these fish, they live on these other little amoebas, or not amoebas, but some kind of algae, I think. I'm sorry, it's algae, or something that's living down there in this impossible situation. Similarly, they found they go down to the earth, like they can go a mile down in the earth where there's tremendous pressure. It's about 140 degrees heat, and the oxygen, I guess air has about 21% oxygen. I don't know if anybody knows. I think that's what I remember. It's about, you know, there's like less than a half a percent oxygen down there. But these nematodes, these little worms, are living there. And apparently these nematodes can live practically anywhere. This is described, this almost sounded like the Bhagavad Gita. I was reading this on the internet. It said, nematodes can survive being boiled, frozen, crushed, dried out, or blasted into space. Almost like the jiva, you know, who can, you know, never be killed, never be cut, frozen, you know, withered by the wind and like that. So they're, you know, they aren't, this isn't the jiva, this is the material body that the jiva is inhabiting. Somehow or another, they are all pervasive and they're finding ways to survive in almost any condition. So we understand this hard struggle for survival here in the material world. And why are these living entities just clinging to life despite impossible odds? Because that's the nature of the soul. The soul is eternal. It is natural for the living entity to want to be alive, because we are. The illusion is that we are thinking, just like that nematode or those lichen, they're clinging to that material body as themselves. In the same way, even human beings with more developed consciousness are clinging to this misconception that we are the body, the mind, the intelligence that grows in the subtle body. And therefore, we cling to these things desperately. Hold on to the material body when it's actually the jiva, the soul within, that is eternal, that does live forever, and will survive any conditions. So, why are we all here? Why are all these living entities in every possible place throughout the universe? Well, the material world, Prabhupada explains, has two purposes. One purpose is to give a place to those rebellious souls, that means us, who wanted somehow or another to leave Krishna and find a place where they could be the supreme controller, enjoyer, and try to enjoy everything separately from Krishna. So those who wish to enjoy separately from Krishna have to have a place separate from Krishna. Of course, nothing is separate from Krishna. Krishna is the source of all material and spiritual worlds. But he gives us the illusion that this place is separate. So because God is not standing right in front of us, as if we are likely he would be if we were in Goloka Vrindavan, it is easy for the living entity to forget God in this material world. So it's a place for rebellious souls who want to enjoy separately. In the purport to that verse, in this verse we just read, it says, means the material world is created to facilitate the sense gratification of the conditioned souls who are trying to enjoy without Krishna their actual master. So this is our condition, trying to enjoy separately from Krishna. And that works out real well for us, doesn't it? We have a great time here in the material world. Everything is wonderful. No. Everything is not wonderful. In fact, it is more like a punishment in this material world. Prabhupada often compares this material world to a prison house. Because we're rebellious, just like if somebody doesn't want to obey the laws of the country and they become a criminal, what happens to them? They live in prison. They have to be separated from, you know, the good citizens who are wanting to live peacefully together and obey the laws. So all those, you could say, good living entities, you know, the Ekapad Vibhuti and the Tripad Vibhuti, the three quarters stayed in the spiritual world. Those of us in the unfortunate one quarter of all living entities in this material world, we had to have a separate place. So we were being punished here in this prison house, where we experience birth, death, disease, and old age. We experience the threefold miseries, everything. The whole gamut of material difficulties, stress, anxiety. So there's both mental punishment and physical punishment. The physical body, the mental body, are experiencing so many things in this material world, all in the hope of trying to somehow enjoy our separate existence from Krishna. So that's not working out so well for us. But there's a second purpose for this material world. Now, if you go back to the prison analogy, prisons generally, most people, when they go to prison, they come out, they enhance their skill set, right? They become better burglars or better criminals. But that's not really the point. If the prisons were properly run, they should be a place of reformation, right? In fact, they used to call the juvenile detention places, probably don't call anymore, but when I was young, they called them reform schools. You went to reform school. Reform school meant to change you, right? So you become a good citizen, productive member of society, obey the laws. So this material world is also like a reform school. It's a place for the conditioned soul to come back to Krishna, to understand that we have to get away from this illusory conception that we are separate from Krishna, trying to enjoy this material world, and again regain our rightful position as eternal servants and lovers of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Krishna, in his kindness, in his mercy, has created this material world in such a way that we actually, by following the laws of God, we can live peacefully in this world with, not exactly like we're always going to enjoy everything, but at least, you know, with a modicum of comfort, and then get out. So what is the purpose of material world? To get out of here, basically. In the, a nice verse in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, 3.10, 3.11, those verses explain this process, material world, sacrifices for Vishnu, etc. In the purport for 3.10, Prabhupada explains this. It says, the Lord created this material world to enable the conditioned souls to learn how to perform yajna, sacrifice, for the satisfaction of Vishnu, so that while in the material world, they can live very comfortably, without anxiety, and after finishing the present material body, they can enter into the kingdom of God. And then Prabhupada said, that is the whole program for the conditioned soul. So that's it. What is the purpose of in this material world? Prabhupada is explaining. Follow the laws of God, live comfortably, become purified, get out of this material world, and go back to Krishna. Go back to the spiritual world. So if we take a step backwards, what is the purpose of the jiva, the living entity? Why are we here if it's not to try to falsely enjoy this material world? We're obviously here as expansions, the small jiva expansions of Krishna, to give pleasure to Krishna and to also enjoy relationship with Krishna. In this purport, it says one can also experience infinite spiritual pleasure by re-establishing our relationship to Krishna. So that is there. We have this relationship with Krishna eternally, but most living entities have forgotten this relationship on the material world. Again, for the purport said, as soon as the senses become absorbed in material gratification, they lose their power to experience the absolute truth. There are some really good lines in this purport. I mean, it's a very nice purport, very instructive. As soon as the senses become absorbed in material gratification, they lose their power to experience the absolute truth. In other words, there's a natural power that we would have to experience Krishna, to experience the absolute truth, as long as the senses are connected with the master of the senses. But as soon as we lose that, we become absorbed in material gratification, we no longer experience Krishna. So everything we experience in this material world is there in purity in the spiritual world. It's described in the Bhagavad Gita 15.1 how the material world is compared to like a banyan tree, with its roots upward and its branches down. And the material world is like a reflection in the water. Of course, everything in the reflection is upside down. So that's how the material world is. We cannot, and this reflection, it sort of blinds us. It prevents us from seeing reality. Because we're absorbed in the reflection of the spiritual world, which is here in the material world, that blinds us to the reality of Krishna and our relationship to Krishna, and we simply become absorbed in this reflection or this illusion. So the coverings of this gross and subtle body have developed over time, a long time, many lifetimes. We don't even know how long we've been in this material world. But Prabhupada says sometimes countless lifetimes, or you know, practical eternity. It's not eternity, but practical eternity. We don't know how long we've been in this material world. And what has happened is these coverings of the gross and subtle body have developed through all of the different experiences in so many different lifetimes. And these experiences cause distress and mental disturbance. And it's described there are two sources of those. One we call anartas, which are unwanted habits from past conditioning. We have so many bad habits which are there from so many lifetimes of conditioning. So those are sort of like the outward manifestation, what we actually do, the action of the body and the words. Then there's the mind. We call samskaras. Samskaras are unwanted impressions in the mind. Everything that's there, you know, all the things, all the nonsense that we think about, everything that distracts us so much, anxieties that we have, problems, issues, all of those things are unwanted impressions, and these are deep mental impressions, these samskaras. Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the Jayavadharma says, there are two types of samskara, called praktana, of past lives, and adunika, of the present life. So in other words, we have everything we've experienced from our childhood and in this life, good experiences, bad experiences, etc. Those are all conditioning the mind. And we also have past lifetimes. This is part of the problem with psychology, often with counseling, which of course is something I have been involved in professionally. And that is that they often don't understand that it's not all just what happened in your childhood. We can be carrying issues, problems, conditioning from lifetimes. Like sometimes people have phobias, right? And, you know, and you can't figure out where they came from. Why would a person be just frightened to death of drowning, of water? Maybe they never had any experience, but they may have drowned in a past lifetime. So that impression carries with them into this lifetime. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that there's two types of these samskaras, and they say they have helped frame your mental constitution, temperament, and contemplations. Interesting. What's the mental constitution? Our personality, right? Who we think we are, but it's the subtle body, the temperament. You know, how we respond to things, how to react. Temperament tends to be more inborn. At least in psychology, they distinguish personality from temperament. Temperament tends to be more what you're born with. Like they can distinguish like about 9 different temperament traits, even in newborn babies.
how they, you know, react and respond and like that. But personality is a combination of what we bring into this lifetime with our learned experiences from the environment, you know, the interaction of the environment and the person. And so that's why it says that there's two kinds, one from past lifetimes, and then there's impressions from this lifetime. So those bring about a very, very strong situation where the mind, you know, is, first of all, we're very convinced we are the mind, even devotees, right? We may think, yeah, I'm not this body, but we usually think what we're thinking, we think that's us. That's me. What I'm thinking, no, that's your mind. Depending upon how purified you are, the mind intelligence may reflect the spiritual nature, but that's only to the degree that those converge, that the mind is purified to be able to understand spiritual knowledge. But generally, you know, we basically have all of these mental conditions that are very strong. Fortunately, we have a process, very simple, called sadhana bhakti, based on hearing and chanting the names of the Lord, the philosophy of the Lord. And that process of sadhana bhakti is meant to purify the mind of all of the, and the body, from all of these samskaras and anartas from the past. Prabhupada explains this a little bit in the science of self-realization. Prabhupada says, he's talking about this, Chito Darpan Marginam, Shikshastakam. Prabhupada says, Marginam means cleanse. Darpanam means mirror. It's an interesting analogy. Lord Chaitanya says, talking about the mirror of the mind. The heart is a mirror. It is like a camera. This is interesting. Prabhupada is saying, giving this, it's a very vivid example. He says, just as the camera takes all kinds of pictures of day and nights, so also our heart takes pictures and keeps them in an unconscious state. Psychologists know this. The heart takes so many pictures, and therefore it becomes covered. We do not know when it's begun, but it is a fact that because there's material contact, our real identity is covered by all of these pictures and impressions that we've accumulated. Therefore, Prabhupada says, Chaito Darpana Marginam. One has to cleanse his heart. And this cleansing process develops gradually through the process of sadhana. It may take some time. There's a lot to clean. We've got a big cleaning job to do. So somehow or another, we've been fortunate that we have this process the Prabhupada's given us. I mentioned this before, but I think it's a nice example. I talked about, in mathematics, at least when I was in high school about 50 or 60 years ago, they talked about called Venn diagrams. And Venn diagrams are circular representation of the relationship of sets. I don't know if anybody remembers this, who was here. And why are they called Venn diagrams? Because they were first developed by John Venn in 1880. Just think of the things you're learning here today. In other words, to fill your head with all kinds of nonsense information. Okay, anyway, but going back to the Venn diagram, it is interesting because you have sets, and you talk about the intersection of these circular sets. So think about, you have two sets. One is activities of pure devotional service, and the other is material, our material consciousness, duties and activities in relationship to the material body. For a non-devotee, they're separate. In fact, the devotional circle may be really tiny and almost non-existent, and the material circle is really huge. Now, as we begin Krishna consciousness, they begin to intersect. There's a little overlap where a certain amount of our activity is devotional service. We're beginning to chant Hare Krishna. We're beginning to associate with devotees, take prasadam. And as we become advanced in Krishna consciousness, that overlap becomes greater and greater between the material and the spiritual activity. And finally, for the Uttamadhikari, the pure devotee, there's a complete overlap, right? Where there's no separate interest, everything is in relationship with Krishna. There's no difference in material activity and spiritual activity. For one who is pure, it is all spiritual activity because one is always thinking of Krishna and how to serve Krishna. So the goal and our actual practice of sadhana is to gradually increase the overlap more and more. Okay,
So we don't need to become needlessly disturbed if we find that we're not completely pure devotees. Rest assured that that will happen. It develops more and more as we progress in Krishna consciousness if we're sincerely taking up the process following the instructions of the spiritual master. So the process of bhakti, of sadhana, transfers that attachment and activity and interest from the material to the spiritual. Bhagavad Gita 7:19 says, after many births and deaths, he who actually acknowledges surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all it is. Such a great soul is very rare. So not so easy to come to this perfect stage. Prabhupada says, when one is further advanced, he can understand their activities in spiritual life, and these activities constitute devotional service. Realizing this, he becomes attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and surrenders to him. He realizes the material world to be a perverted reflection of spiritual variegatedness. He realizes that everything there is in relationship with the Supreme Lord Krishna. Such a universal vision of Vasudeva precipitates one's full surrender to the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna as the highest goal. In such a surrender, great souls are very rare. So, the pure devotee sees everything in relationship with Krishna, and that's also described as very rare. But possible. Very possible if one is following in the footsteps of the great soul who has that vision of realization. So, back to our purport here. It says, if one engages the senses in the service of the Personality of Godhead, then one enjoys unlimited pleasure upon seeing the transcendental beauty of the Lord's form. So again, the process to be able to see the beauty of the Lord, to see Krishna, is to engage the senses in the service of Krishna. Krishna is called Hrishikesh. Hrishikesh means the master of the senses. So bhakti engages the senses in the service of Krishna, who is the master of the senses. Sarvopati vidhir muktam tat pradvena nirmalam hrishikena hrishikesha sevanam bhakti uchite. So Munara Pancharatna, it's quoted extensively throughout Nectar Devotion and Chaitanya Charitamrita. The verse means, bhakti, or devotional service, means engaging all of our senses in the service of the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the master of all the senses. When the spirit soul renders service unto the Supreme, there are two side effects. One is being freed from all material designations, and one's senses are purified simply by being employed in the service of the Lord. So, one becomes free from the bodily concept of life, whereas one has this understanding, realization that one is the spirit soul, and not this material body and mind, and also the senses themselves become purified by being employed in the service of the Lord. So that's our process. We engage everything in the service of the Lord. We engage the body, the mind, and the words. We try to, everything we do, all of our activities, to be centered on Krishna, and therefore even the material senses, the material mind and body, become purified and become spiritualized. You know, of course, we've all heard, you know, Prabhupada gives different analogies. We've all heard them. It's like Prabhupada often says the one about you take the iron rod, you put it in the fire. The iron rod is still iron, but it now has all the qualities of fire, right? It's emanating heat and light. It has become like fire. So in the same way, we have material body and senses. When they come in contact, become purified by Krishna, by the spiritual energy, the superior energy of the Lord, then they also become spiritualized. And they are acting spiritually, just in the same way that that iron rod is now acting like fire. So that is our process of bhakti. And when we do that, when we take that up, because Krishna is the supreme source of all pleasure, the master of the senses, we partake in that. We partake in that pleasure of the Lord. Although Krishna is very great, and he can experience pleasure with every jiva, with every living entity, but to speak of his own pleasure potency, his own spiritual energy, Radharani, the gopis, etc., Krishna's experience unlimited pleasure, but because we are part and parcel of Krishna, we also experience that
as you know, for us, it's a huge amount of pleasure. Maybe not in relation to Krishna, but the Rupa Goswami says that the pleasure derived from the process of bhakti is like thousands of times greater than any pleasure found in the material world or from the personal realization. And right, all of the pleasures compared to the water and the footprint, a calf's footprint, a little bit of water in the footprint compared to the ocean of the pleasure of devotional service. So we enjoy that spiritual energy, that spiritual pleasure, that ananda, when the senses become purified in relationship to Krishna. Okay, thank you very much. I'll go to Srila Prabhupada. Some comments, questions? Janmashtami?
I'm curious, in the translation, so therefore bringing all of your senses under control, and thus subduing the mind, you should see the entire world as situated within the self. It was expanded everywhere. There's an explanation in the purport, who's expanded everywhere, but one should see the entire world is situated within the self. Is there any way you can clarify that?
That one was a little difficult, and I thought I'd just sort of skip over that and somebody else. Yeah, thank you. But, it's one of those, there are other verses like this that talk about, you know, the relation, and that's why there's a lot of clarification about the difference between impersonal and personal concept. It doesn't mean that we become all pervading, it doesn't mean that everything exists or that we are the same as God and like that. So that's all explained here within the purport, and of course Prabhupada explains it many, many times. But it's a little difficult to get that exactly from this verse. Let me look at it if I can find it here. One should see the entire world is situated within the self, who's expanded everywhere, and also see the individual self within me. Oh, okay. See the individual self within me, Krishna, that's pretty clear. But how is the entire world situated in the self? Of course, expanded everywhere, we know, because the living entity is situated everywhere. I'm not sure if it means the consciousness, that the individual self has full understanding, full realization, you know, that it's expanded everywhere. You want to give a shot at this, Prabhupada? What do you think?
When Dhruva Maharaj was set in a serious austerity to have darshan of the Lord, then he united with the Lord in that meditation, that each breathing of Dhruva Maharaj, literally, when he's breathing in, the entire universe air was breathing in. So then a similar question came.
Yeah, and he stopped the breathing of the entire universe, right?
Yeah. And when Dhruva Maharaj was breathing out, the entire universe was getting that air. But how is that to understand? But Vishwanatha Chaturthi Thakur gave a commentary that in the loving relationship with the Lord, when the devotee in that position, that time the Lord situated in his heart, it's as equal as the same Lord in the all-pervasive conception. So it's nothing to be bewildered in that sense.
So in other words, I think what you're saying is that when one is very purified, one is very connected with Krishna, understands the will of Krishna, and is completely, like, sort of united, it becomes one with Krishna in the sense that one with the will of the Lord, and therefore the self is understanding this all-pervading nature of Krishna. So it's really Krishna's quality,
correct,
that the living entity is in contact with in a purified state and able to understand.
Correct.
Is that right? Close? Okay.
Yeah. This is what it is, that Prabhupada says Krishna expanded even in the atom. So then he goes further, he said, but he's not alone there. He is with his entire creation, with his associates. So I'm thinking in atom is Krishna with his associate and the entire creation within the atom. So it's a similar logic.
Yeah. So when one has a realization, they'd have realization of everything.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good enough. Cool.
Hare Krishna, thank you. Also on the same point, just in a word for word, this kind of helped me to appreciate. For Vikata means spread out, referring to the material world, as the substance of his material enjoyment. So there's two conceptions of the material world. There's a conception in knowledge as Krishna's energy, and there's a conception in ignorance as the substance of our material enjoyment. So the substance of our material enjoyment means that it's a reflection of our own false ego. That's not really what it is, but we see it as such. We see the world like, this is good, this is bad, I like this, I don't like that. It's all a reflection of our own ego. So in that sense, what I took away from that was that when you see the world as situated within yourself, means that you see that what you were seeing and your different judgments and so forth is really just your own ego. But actually, both that perception and your own self, as the verse goes on to say, are just situated in Krishna. They're both supporting parts of Krishna.
And that's good. And then the purport says in this verse, going like this, apanikshashva vittatam, means the material world is created to facilitate the sense gratification of the soul. We're trying to enjoy without Krishna. So, vittatam is spread out. So, in other words, that conception. So another way of looking at it from, I think, the perspective you're saying is we can see there's sort of a contrast here to a consciousness of a living entity which might be illusory as compared to the true concept where everything is situated in Krishna. There's probably several ways we could look at this.
Yeah.
Okay, there's another question here? Oh, one here and then we'll go back to okay.
We have a simple sound bite, you look at the cell, which is like a drop in the ocean, and then you understand the ocean. So by looking at the self, self-realization, as a small part of Krishna, which is all quantitatively limited. And that's a real simple sound bite response, perhaps.
No, I think we're all kind of circling around a similar concept.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Did you have a question? Oh, I thought you went over the lady's side. No comments?
I have one question.
Okay.
The psychological, whatever the pre-impression, you mentioned there's two things. Physical, that Jaya Dharma also mentioned, the adhanik sanskar and praktam sanskar.
Yeah.
What coming from previous life and what we are upbringing in this life right now.
Right.
So both are affecting. But what about our free will is still there? It's minute, but still free will is there. And I was thinking Harishwari Prabhu's diary where Prabhupada demonstrated, I'm paraphrasing what Harishwari Prabhu was saying, that there was two homeless guy in Sydney, and then the devotee grabbed them and brought in, and one, he can't speak fluently as a starter, and they put him in kitchen to do the dishwashing. And after 35 years, Harishwari Prabhu saw him again, and the same, he's still happy chanting and doing dishwashing in the kitchen. Even though such a nice senior devotee, but still he's happy there, because it's very difficult for him to preach or go out and do anything. And the other homeless guy came, and they also did the head shave and the nice clean prasadam, nice place to sleep. He left after 3 days. He got very angry. He wants to remain as a homeless on the street. So Prabhupada made a very nice point. Even though we have a prarabdha karma, pre-impression and all this, but still free will is there, that we can choose always to serve the Lord or not to serve the Lord.
Absolutely. That was the question.
Well, it was the question that the commentary actually filled it up in that sense.
Yeah. A very good point though. Yeah, free will is always there. And that's what we're saying. Even though there is such strong conditions for your world by the mercy of the spiritual master Krishna, we can break through that. And we can take to the process of Krishna consciousness if we have a desire. And desire, of course, is the product of free will. Yeah. Okay, one more in the back. Okay.
I was told by someone recently that when the astronauts are coming back to planet Earth, there is visibility of light, which is an indication of life. But when they are going to these other planets, wherever they go, they don't see anything.
What the memory is coming, that they see what?
When they come back to planet Earth,
yeah.
There is visibility of light on this Earth, which is the indication of life.
Hmm.
Light. They see, they see that.
Hmm.
But when they are going to Mars or wherever, they don't see anything. Just barren land.
Hmm.
I don't know. I haven't heard that one.
Okay.
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 Thank you.